Good morning. At this time, I call the meeting to order. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Cook has a statement to make.
Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed with the Office of Secretary of State under Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Chairman Post, at this time, we will call the Finance Committee to order.
Oh, we're going to start with lemon water up there.
Okay.
For our Finance Committee?
Yeah.
So I am up.
Here.
Just in case.
Oh, I better get that gavel. I may need it. Boom.
Jumping right down to finance.
Yeah, there you go. I'm Chairman Holt, the Chairman of the Finance Committee. The first order of business is the approval of the previous committee meeting minutes, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
Second.
Okay. Commissioner Friedman, second by Commissioner Brown. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Committee item number one, land and water plan update. Mr. Cook, will you please make your presentation?
Very good. Thank you, sir. Chair Wiles, to report on this morning, the state auditor's office, as you know, completed and released an audit of the State Park Financial Management System. The audit made 48 recommendations. The agency agreed with all but two of those recommendations. And the department is currently preparing an implementation plan and will comply with the recommendations to observe that most of those recommendations, most of those issues we were aware of. We're working on many of those, as you know, and we will complete that audit to satisfaction. As agreed on in our recent contract extension, Verizon has designed a web-based hunting and fishing license sales system that we are testing in about 10 locations here at one hospital. It seems to be working pretty well. A new version of our state park reservation system has been in development over the last year and is currently being tested here at the headquarters and in several parks. When fully implemented, this new reservation system will address several of the recommendations in the state auditor report. Let me lay out kind of our plan for the FY08 budget. Obviously, we won't know anything definite about our budget and our funding until the legislative session is over. And we'll actually start the process here within the agency in about mid-May, working with the division directors and their division. When the session ends, we'll go to work with the numbers that we have, and we'll have a commission budget workshop in mid-July. We'll be working with you as we go through that process, as we approach that mid-July meeting. And, of course, we'll present the budget to the commission for the commission's final approval at the August commission meeting. Lastly, I think at each of your places this morning, and literally, as I already said, hot off the press, is our brand new Texas State Farm Guide. 120-page color booklet, approximately 500,000 copies will be arriving early this month and distributed between our state parks, CPWD sites, and field offices, and Park Stop Travel Information Centers, and local Commission of Industry Bureau offices and Chambers of Commerce. Look through this. I think you'll see that it's a wonderful document. We're able to use additional dollars from advertising revenue to mail out the guides, about 40 cents per guide. The legislators will receive a copy of this guide this next week. It's a good document, very popular, very much in demand, and a very good job. We appreciate all of our sponsors there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's it, sir.
Thank you, Bob. I think we'll move on. We'll have a discussion later. Committee item number two, financial overview. Ms. Mary Fields, will you please make your presentation?
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, I'm Mary Fields, CFO, and I'm here to provide the financial overview. The focus of the presentation today will be to provide a revenue and budget status for the first half of fiscal year 2007. We'll start off with the state park receipts. When comparing state park gross receipts through February 28, at $12.76 million, we're up 9.2% or $1.08 million over last year's collections at this same time. In reviewing all of the categories of park receipts, they are all up. Facilities are currently up by 8.3%. Entrance fees are up by 2.4%. Concession revenue is up by 27.8%. And park pass sales are slightly up at 3%. The miscellaneous category is pretty small, but it is also up as well. So overall, we're doing real well with the revenues in our state parks, and we'll hope to see this trend continue for the last half of the fiscal year. Our boat revenue as of February 28th is at $6.2 million. This is up by 6.9% or $397,000 compared to last year at the same time. Again, here, the boat registration revenue is up by 8.8%. Revenue for titles issued is down a little bit by 3.8%, and revenue for sales tax is up by 17.4%. We do continue to transfer that 15% of registration and titling revenue to Fund 64, which amounts to about $802,000 based on the revenues through February. More good news here with our license sales revenue. This is also up as of the end of February. It's $68.8 million. We are at $1.5 million in revenues, or at 2.3%. All the categories of revenue are higher than the previous year, and you can still see the same trends that we've discussed with the non-resident versus the resident revenues for hunting and fishing. In looking at those categories, the combo revenue is up 2.3%. Non-resident fishing is up by 11.2%. Resident fishing is up 1.1%. Non-resident hunting is up 4.6%. And resident hunting is up by 0.7%. And other revenue is also slightly up. The sales, in reviewing the number of licenses sold here, it tracks pretty closely with the revenue. We're up 1.5% or at 2.06 million, we're up 1.5% there. And here is total hunting for both of the categories is at 0.04%. Combo sales are, let's see, I think I might have skipped the fishing one. Combo sales are up 1.6%. And the fishing is up 1.3% overall. Sorry about that. I got lost in all those percentages.
They're all up. That's the good news here.
So excuse me for that. When comparing our 2007 revenue collections as of February 28th to the annual revenue estimates, we're continuing to do well. And that's no surprise, you know, after we've just discussed the growth in all of our major revenue sources. With 50% of the year elapsed, we've collected 59.9% of our Fund 9 Game Fish and Water Safety Funds, 50.9% of State Park Funds, Local Park Fund is at 62.6% in the other category, which is several funds rolled together, is at 83.1%. Our overall budget has increased by $18.4 million since November 30th when we last reported. That's taking our budget to $329.3 million. Budget adjustments made during the months of December, January, and February are summarized on the slide. The first couple of lines there are the most significant adjustments. When you look at that rider 26 and 27, basically, $8.8 million of that $9.7 is our additional revenue that's earned above the comptroller's biannual revenue estimate. You're seeing that come into the budget. So, and then on the grants, there, I looked at all the various grants. There's just numerous grants in there. There's not one specifically to highlight, but there's several grants also coming into the budget. In looking lastly just at our budget versus expense here, we have 58.6% of the budget remaining with 50% of the year elapsed again. All of the categories, as you can see, are basically on track. We are showing 83.8% of capital projects still available, but there are several projects in progress, and this balance will continue to decline as the year progresses. That $15 million at the bottom there are the bonds for the East Texas Fish Hatchery. Those bonds have been issued. We're still in the design phase of that hatchery, and I'm told we won't really start encumbering and expending those bonds for the construction part of the hatchery until kind of the first part of the summer.
So the bonds have been issued?
They were issued in February.
Okay.
And basically that concludes the presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Question on the hatchery. We've issued $15 million of bonds. We got $12 million in that account. So we... How much of the $12 million that's in the account is now dedicated to debt service? How much is surplus?
The debt service on the hatchery, I believe for this year, is $1.3 million. Does that sound right?
So 2.6 for 2 years. Okay.
Debt service is in base. It's not included in that
service. So it's above and beyond the debt service? Right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, it is. Those are balances at the close of fiscal year 07.
Okay.
But the $12 million at this point is not authorized to spend. In other words, you get your 15 bonds without the 12.
Okay.
Correct. Any other discussions or questions for Mary? Okay. Thank you, Mary. Committee item number 3, legislative update. Mr. Robert Cook, Bob, is going to present this. We have a handout here I'd like to see, Bob.
Good.
That will help hopefully understand the legislative conversation we're going to have as you get this. The first column is our request. Go ahead and let Gene pass it out. Okay. The first column is Texas Parks and Wildlife's request. The second one is LBB's funding options, okay. Then you have the House markup. And then you have the finance committees, okay? So I thought this would help us then as Bob goes through his the conversation relative to the legislative update. Thank you, Bob.
And in the process of doing this, I may call on Mary and or Gene to help us work through it. I think probably one of the most important things I can say is that we have been heard. We certainly have made our request known throughout this process that we were in, and we're still early in the process. You know, if you gauge it on where we are meter, we're probably a third of the way, 40% of the way through. So we still got a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunity, and we are working at it diligently.
Okay. As Gene did point out too, of course, it always is a moving target. So some of the things, particularly under House and Senate, may be changing literally daily. So I just want to make sure that I understand it's in the fixed document at this point. Our request is that other than that, it's an LBB is, but everything else is a changing scenario.
I'll ask Mary to run the slides for me if you want to watch the screen there. I wanted to, you know, you may recall that our number one priority request was to restore the 10% reduction that we had prepared our budget by, and LBB did recommend that, and both Senate and House have so far that is in the document. Our base budget is where we started from, as opposed to losing that 10% right off the top. Article 6 is kind of our budget. You know what they're talking about when they talk about parks and wildlife. Article 11 is what we lovingly call the wish list. And, you know, but what Article 11 means, and I think it's really important, is that is still alive. That is still, those items that are included in Article 11 are still on the table for discussion. So as at this moment in time, as HB 1 has been passed out of the House at $169 million items above the funded base bill, and from the Senate, which is still has not been passed out of Senate yet, but it's probably going to go very much like you see there on the board, somewhere around 128.8. Break that down a little bit and look at it, and I guess the key areas that we continue to work very hard with folks downtown to discuss in the State Park salary item there. We had requested 7.1 million per year, I believe it was, they're running at a level there about 4.3, 5.7. One of the biggest areas is at State Park Operating, which we made a significant request, as you can see, in State Park Operating, paying the bills, paying the utilities, all the services that we get. That has really been, at this point, very much reduced in the recommendations, that's one of the biggest areas of concerns. You see that between Senate and House, they come up kind of pretty close with the same numbers, but they do it in a different way. You know, Article 11, there's a number of items contained in Article 11 in the House. Transportation equipment, as you go on down that list there, has received a lot of support. Division support cost, you know, where we would have staff to replace folks that we've lost in our infrastructure division and in our financial group. That's been pretty well supported. Capital repairs, they're working on that. They know that we need repair money. You can see some money in minor repairs, but the capital repair item where we asked for the $46 million in bond money, they're approaching that from a different direction. So that's one that as we go into conference, we'll be working very hard and very closely with them on. Land acquisition, right now where it stands, the last we saw, the $9.6 million from Eagle Mountain Lake was still in Article 6 in the House bill. I believe there is a provision for that to be taken out of there. In one of the riders or one of the amendments. That's what we hear. But bottom line, it doesn't, what we hear in the discussions and at the table with them, it doesn't sound like we're going to, that they're interested in funding land acquisition and development with new money. Just go around and there's zero in that other than that money from the sale of Eagle Mountain Lake, and like I say, that was very much in the air at this point in time. Local park grants funded at a pretty good level, not what we asked for, but at a kind of brings us back to where we were a couple, three, 4 years ago. It's a nice level. I believe that there's much greater need than that, but brings us back to about that level. You see, there's some debt service put in there.
One thing I wanted to just mention too is these are biennial totals in here, so this covers both years of the biennium for all these numbers.
Okay. In our request for GR for game wardens, you'll recall that we requested for the biennium, we requested about something over $5 million, $5.2, $5.6 million for our game wardens, and it looks like both House and Senate are interested in helping us there, are interested in funding that at some level. They both put some provision in there for that, and again, we'll go to conference and continue to work that one. Freshwater fish stamp, we're not seeing much support there for bringing out that additional money, additional revenue that is coming in to the freshwater fish stamp funds. At this point in time, it sounds like we're going to stay at the same level with the $15 million bond. And again, we continue to work that one and have a lot of support throughout the state to bring that funding forward. But it's a cost to the bill, and they may or may not do that. Repairs to battleship, House and Senate approaching a couple of different ways. The House recommended making up that $12.5 million out of the GO bond that is specified for the battleship. And really, we had a good discussion with Mr. Isaac and Mr. Noriega and Mr. Smith, I believe it was, on that one, in that they recognize that that's not going to finish the battleship, that's not going to complete the deal, but where we are in that process, the Battleship Foundation has agreed to pay for the engineering study, and we all agree that that's first. And until that engineering study is done, we really won't have a solid idea of what needs to be done. Everybody is, I believe, agreed that the best end result is in a dry berth. So that's a kind of a landmark achievement, if nothing else. And we know that that's going to cost significant dollars, somewhere in that, from anywhere from $30 to $50 million, depending on what we have to do to the structure of the battleship itself. So that gets us started, and that's kind of the approach the House took. The Senate, at this point in time, and as you can see, it's in Article 11. It's in the wish list there. But they kept it alive. That's money that I believe they referred to that as bond money, not Prop 8 bond money, but they referred to that as we might bond it this way. So we'll see how that goes. Texas State Railroad, there's no funding in either article of the Article 6 bills as it stands right now. There was a rider amendment from, I believe, Mr. Hobson, for $7.6 million for the biennium to restaff and begin repairs at the railroad, and there is some support for that in the Senate also. The rest of those items there, Border Security Initiative, I think prompted out of the governor's office and ends up being some support in our law enforcement division, which would be very helpful. Canadian River Off-Highway Vehicle Site is an initiative that they've been talking to us about for a number of years and actually would provide for an OHV park that we would operate along a strip of the river there. We've got an access point at the major highway there, right north of Amarillo, along the Canadian. And if that funding comes forward, we would be able to operate that site, with that additional funding. And in Article 11 there, again, you see the debt service that would be required to fund that money on the battleship. Okay. Significant riders in both houses, particularly in the House, there's a number of riders. I won't even attempt to tell you about all of them, but I can tell you this: that a number of the considerable amount of the funding that is in the House bill at this point in time requires a lot of reporting on the audit, which we're okay with that. We can do that. It adds 16 internal auditors in state parks. The discussion kind of this, and we've not had a lot of opportunity to get into that one, but we put an auditor to make sure that the audit recommendations are being implemented and done right. We would put an auditor in each park, and we would have 8 others. We work with them on that. I've got a little bit of problem with that, but depends on how they fund it, particularly.
Yeah. Well, I believe that's in each region.
Each region.
Each region.
Each region. Each region.
Each region.
Each
region.
Each region.
Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region. Each region.
But they want 2 to the region?
It's just rough talk right now. There's not anything very clear on that, John, but what we heard from LBB is I recall no less than one in the region, and I guess have some floaters. I'm not sure. It's not too clear. You can see down there appropriation the real estate sale, which, by the way, as you, I believe, all know, we did get Eagle Mountain Lake sold for the appraised value, and that money has been deposited in the state treasury.
and there's a rider that would appropriate that money for the purposes intended, the purposes that it was.
Yeah. Is that rider attached?
It's going with the House bill.
I spoke
attached to HB1.
I spoke this week to Charlie Guerin, and he has the assurances of Chairman Chisholm that will be part of the bill. So that I got to say, while we're on the subject of Eagle Mountain Lake, it wasn't always assumed that we would get this done. I mean, it was quite an accomplishment, and I want to thank Phil Montgomery for his work. He worked hard on it, and especially our friends at the Trust for Public Lands. You may remember, it wasn't always the case that we would get this sold and keep it a park, which was always my goal, which was to be able to reallocate that money to acquisition of a new park in the area consistent with our plan. And the Trust for Public Land really came through on this deal. And the people of Fort Worth, the corporate citizens and a lot of private citizens, made it happen. And so they should be recognized and thanked. And as I told the Trust for Public Land, all you've done now is make sure I call you every time when you get one of these deals done. Remember, they also did the government candy deal in San Antonio.
Well, it's an important step.
If I can, let me just bring you guys up to date. Peter and I appeared before the House Subcommittee on Appropriations, and Peter appeared before the Senate Finance Committee on this issue of the audit. And as Peter said, we welcome the audit. Anytime an agency is going to go ask for the significant increase of funding in the Parks Division that we asked for, an audit's appropriate. I mean, that makes sense. What the audit shows is we've got some significant shortcomings in the financial controls in state parks. But to make it as simple and straightforward as I can here, if you don't have the people to collect the money, you're not going to collect all the money. And it's that simple. So I think Chairman Isaac was right. There is a chicken and egg problem here, which is how do we address this without having the resources to address it. Some of the other testimony I think was enlightening, which is that these park visitation numbers are always an estimate. I mean, there's not four walls and a turnstile like in a museum. It led to some, I think, rather misleading reports that there was some sort of inflation of park visitation. That's not correct. Okay? The estimates of park visitation are all estimates of the federal parks, state parks in other states. That's the way it's done because you've got an open space there. So it's always an estimate. Secondly, the system we use is the state of the art, and according to Dr. Crompton at Texas A&M, who designed it, there is not a better system than the one we use for estimating visitation. The problem is the difference between what we can document from receipts and that estimate, and that is a large gap. But what that gap results from, what it comes from, is the visitors that they're not collecting from. Right here, McKinney Falls is a perfect example. Go out here any day at 5 o'clock and see the stream of bikers, hikers, and walkers that are going in and out of McKinney Falls State Park. They're not paying because there's nobody there to take their money. We don't have staff for that. So you have that, and then you have a very large number of people who are part of a group, Boy Scouts, church groups, and whatnot, that, that's a lot of people. And they're either paying a discounted amount or not at all. And we need to improve our system of how we charge those groups. Correct to say, Gene always is there to say, not exactly, Mr. Chairman.
So feel free to say not exactly, Mr. Chairman. we all listen when Gene says not exactly. We don't have a real uniform system of how we deal with groups and group discounts, and we need that. But having said that, I don't think it's a good idea for us to balance the books and fix these parks on the backs of the Boy Scouts and the church groups either. I mean, we don't want to do anything to discourage their use. So, with that, yes, we agree with that a lot has to be improved. There's really only, I won't go into all of it, but there's one significant finding, though, of that audit that I really take issue with, and that's Chapter 2-A, that states that we don't have any verification for the need for new parks. I think we've got
one.
We don't have any verification of the need for new parks. That's 2-A. You'll find it in the audit. I've been working on this since 1997, and I think we've got a lot of data. And I think one of the clearest indications is that every time the people of the state get a chance to vote on open space and ballot initiatives for parks and open space, they vote for it to tax themselves for new parks. And I won't bore you with the details, but you know that the stats is high of the reports that we've been doing since I've been involved in the last 10 years. The polling data in the Texas Tech study that Dr. Schmidley did, I mean, that's exhaustive, would be an understatement. So anyway, but that is one finding that
I agree with you 100%. I think it's important to note that the work that you were included on back when Catherine Armstrong was chairman,
right,
when and possibly the chairman before her, and certainly continuing on with Ernest Angelo, who filled her spot, the work that you did on the our land and water conservation plan is clearly documented in that plan.
Yeah, I agree. That's part of that stat.
For 5,000-acre new state park.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
the greater area is in the Dallas-Fort Worth collect area.
Yeah, I agree.
We have a large park.
As I said, that is the one area I have a strong disagreement, and we can attack that maybe after we attack the areas of the audit where we do need to get to work. I did say the other day, and I hope I didn't contradict any of the other commissioners' feelings on this, but I said that we welcome the oversight, but we can't have the oversight without the resources to do something about the problem. We did not get in this fix on state parks, whether it's $400 million backlog and all the other problems, because we weren't collecting enough money from the Boy Scout. I think that's kind of explains itself. But anyway, we need to get to work. We need to address the issues of the audit.
Okay. Let's look at some of the state riders.
Before we move on, I have one question to ask about the freshwater stamp funds. The money that is being held right now, $12 million plus, how were those dollars generated? Who paid that money?
Everybody that buys a freshwater fish station. Everybody that buys a...
Will you say that louder?
that money is collected as people who support the refurbishment and the rebuilding and the construction of new freshwater fish hatcheries in Texas. Every time they buy a stamp, or the freshwater fisheries stamp, and or a super combo.
And what did we tell those people that we were going to do with that money when they paid $5?
Well, the staff was approved, of course, by the Texas legislature with the direction to us to build new hatcheries and to refurbish the hatcheries that we have.
Thank you
for repeating
that.
We hope to do that.
As it's been said time and time again.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to leave the impression, though, that you know we're not being heard and that we're not getting attention. With the exception of operations, those are some pretty good numbers. I mean, it's a real improvement. Don't be discouraged. Especially in capital repairs, we're getting a lot of FTEs. Would you agree, Chairman Holt, with the exception of operations, we're making real progress.
And essentially there, it was that the feeling was that we need to be collecting more dollars and using those dollars for operations. So the Senate authorized us, any dollars we collect, to be able to spend it in operating. But we're in that catch-22 situation because at least the last two legislative periods, maybe longer, we need to get some operating dollars. So I think, but I want to go to Bob Cook's point is that he said is we're kind of a third through this whole process. Congress committee hadn't even met. The bill hadn't come out of Senate committee yet, much less the Senate. So we've got a long ways to go. And we are getting support, and the key is just keep the momentum going.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just one comment. The mere fact that we have an audit report that may have some points for improvement, to me, it's not necessarily a negative. The whole purpose of an audit is to analyze and try to improve a system. I would think that you take corporate America, and if you were to do an internal audit, you're always going to find room for improvement. So I don't take the audit as much as a negative, as much as an improvement to the system. And I have an accounting background, so I have a little bit of background in auditing. So I'm not discouraged by the audit. I think it just gives us a different standard that we all should strive to achieve. And hopefully with the funding, we can accomplish that.
We agree with that, Vice Chairman. Yeah. We'll be a better outfit.
Absolutely.
Recommendations implemented, and we're looking forward to it and approaching it very positive. These Senate riders mostly speak to the implementation of the auditor's recommendation, cost-benefit analysis associated with transfer of sites and where we can increase park attendance. Those are all involved in these riders to, again, oversee the audit, to report back on the audit, do some work to verify attendance numbers and how we might increase our revenues there. Mary, explain that first one, that step there in reference to the comptroller adjustment. It also appeared in the House at a little bit different twitch.
This is kind of a different take on our current Rider 27. On the Senate side, what they've done is right now we have an estimated amount. So if we earn over what's estimated in the rider, we get to keep it. In this one, on Fund 9, they've written the rider as a not to exceed $1 million. So even if we collect revenues above that, we cannot exceed that million, and that is a biennial total for Fund 9. On Fund 64, this one is very different in that it is actually requiring us to earn the $16 million above the estimate over the biennium with no fee increases to meet the amount appropriated above. So when you're looking at the Senate totals on this side, basically out of that funding, they expect us to earn $16 million of it over the biennium to fund those operations and various areas that were discussed previously.
Now, Peter, can I interrupt just a moment here? How are we going to earn $16 million? That's $16 million.
Well, I think that's
sales or...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the issue that we've got to educate the Senate and the House probably on, too, relative to the audit. Is an understanding that we're in a catch-22 situation over the last two legislatures, and probably over the last four. Our FTEs are down, our budget's been down, and relative to trying to collect these dollars, even though our overall income's gone up fairly dramatically over the last let's say, 8 to 10 years, it's nowhere near this number, is that I think that's the education that Bob and Jane and all of us are going to have to do, is to help them understand. Because we haven't had the funding, we haven't been able to collect the additional dollars, and so to ask us to collect the additional dollars without funding for people, systems, and those kind of things, you're in a catch-22, almost an impossible situation. So I think part of our job is to educate the legislators on the needs for and understanding that, in a way, they really have not given us the $16 million, $8 million a year, as the biennium, and that's just going to take some time. Because what they've done is look strictly at the office.
Yeah, and John, they have a point here, because, look, we have increased, although we have increased our receipts, help me gain almost 50%, from 22 to 33 million.
How much of that was fee increases? We had some fee increases.
It was a combination of fee increases, increased attendance.
Okay, so it's a and obviously some increase, I would guess, in efficiency of collecting. But so we can collect more money. We've done that. In the last 4 years, we've collected 50% more money, from 22 to 33 million. All right? We didn't have that increase. We didn't have a 50% increase in visitorship or in fees. So the auditor's right. You know, we are leaving some money on the table. We need to collect it. The problem I have is that's not going to be an exact number because of all the different factors involved between the visitor estimate. And am I getting it right, Walt? I mean, there's a lot of different factors in that number. But if we're held to that exact number, I'm not sure that's what you're going
to
collect.
I need to collect more fees, but $16 million is a lot of money, and at present time, do we have a plan how we're going to do that? Because we don't have a plan how we're going to do that, Peter?
Well, John, one of the things, and maybe Bob or Gene, you can speak to this, we do have a system going in place that kicks up, starts up at the end of this month, which will make us more efficient than we are, but Mary, maybe you can speak to it, we need a second part of that, which I think we put in a request for another $1.3 million, and take that to the next level. Why don't you speak to that for just a moment to help us get more efficient in collections?
We are improving some of the financial control issues with the financial system, and there are two more phases. We are, as Commissioner Holt mentioned, beginning the rollout of the new system toward the end of April, and then we have two phases that will actually do some further accounting improvements and improvements overall to the system, and then we'll be interfacing that system with our other financial systems. As far as other areas of implementing the recommendations of the audit, I don't know that I'm best to speak to that. I think, you know, we will be trying to improve some of our visitation counts out in the parks, and, you know, a combination of that and putting together a plan to address all the audit recommendations should help with some additional revenue collection. But and with more accurate visitation counts, I think, you know, it'll help.
Commissioner, I think the best way to answer that question is that,
because it hasn't been answered yet,
immediately following when we receive the final, the audit report, I mean, we went to work and developed started a draft plan of how to implement the audit. Part of that plan is going to be dependent upon where we end up June 1. Funding available, FTEs available, those kinds of issues. Because when you got overnight campers in a park, you can't lock the gate. People are going to be going in and out, off and on all night. You're camping. You know, we're just going to have some more, some additional controls, some standardization of verifying that if people came in during the night and they set up camp, that we go by and check the campsites, and anybody who's not checked in, collect that money. We're going to have to make some decisions. If something like this stays in place, I think we're going to have to make some decisions. One of the biggest issues, in my opinion, regarding this issue is whether or not we're going to charge those Boy Scouts, church groups, school groups, individual families, when they come to the gate, because that money is included in that 16 million. I think that's a major decision. I think that's, as Commissioner Holt spoke to, that's part of the education process that we've got to get done as this goes to conference committee, to make sure that we understand what's to make up that 16 million or not be 16 million. But until we get to June 1, until we know what has been appropriated, until we know what riders have passed, what riders have come with this plan, we're going to work on the audit immediately. We're working on it right now. We're working on those various steps. But the final plan of how to collect that 16 million, I would think we would need to wait until we get a little more clear direction.
And Bob, I agree with that. I think, John, you're bringing up a good point, but I think that's part of our job now in this commission is to educate and communicate. And so I think that's something we're all going to have to do with the legislature between now and June 1st, and particularly the conference committee meeting in the next probably 2 weeks from now they're going to start, is help them understand the requirements that they're asking us to do are probably not possible unless it's on the backs of schools and collecting dollars in areas maybe that legislators don't want to but are not aware of at this point. So I can argue that that's part of our job.
How did somebody come up with this $16 million shortfall that we're letting certain groups to the tune of $16 million come into our parks?
You want to answer that one? I think you probably dealt with this closely. They basically used our numbers, Commissioner Parker, and that's part of the weakness of the documentation.
Oh, seats on the quake.
Go on, Scott. Go ahead. My name is Scott Moore, Deputy Executive Director for Operations. Excuse me. In our meetings with the auditors, first of all, I would point out that in the audit itself, the $16 million is referenced as a potential loss. If you read the document closely, it doesn't say that they think we actually lost $16 million. They say that given the poor documentation that was referenced relative to our numbers, there is a potential for up to $16 million in losses. They put together a formula that looks at visitation. One of the weaknesses that we've acknowledged is that without the technology and the staff in the field, we don't have a very consistent way to look at visitation from site to site to site. It is one of the things we need to fix. So my belief is that the auditors looked at our numbers, which were not the strongest numbers in the world, or certainly better than they have been, and then used some mathematical formulas to evolve a potential number. So obviously, the bottom line is we agreed that there are recommendations in the audit that if we clean up would allow us to have visitation numbers and revenue numbers that would more accurately reflect what the real number is out there. We don't know what the real number is. But I think the number came from the fact that our numbers are confusing at some points, the way we collect those numbers, and some assumptions about those people that visit and whether or not they should be paying or not. And those were assumptions that we weren't involved in driving.
Have we taken that $16 million and backed out what we would consider to be, which was the standard deviation and break up the fees and the fee structures? Can you put a number of visitors to that? Can you put an actual attendance at the state park system? I mean, give us a range or a ballpark of the number of people that we would have to account for that number.
We have not done that, but I think we could. If what you're saying is how many folks would have to visit the parks to make up the $16 million, I think we could come up with an estimate for that.
I think that could be helpful for the legislature, because if it's not a doable number, if it's totally beyond reason, then I think that we need to know that or to realize that.
Well, I think if you use $3 as an average entry fee, because our entry fees run from $1 to $5,
you know, that 5 million extra people every year you have to bring through the door to come up with a $15 million budget. Well, you make it $8 million a year. So,
yeah.
So, you can do some simple math like that. The issue then becomes, who are you going to charge? Who are you going to discount? Are you going to continue to allow discounts for church groups and Boy Scouts or not? And the second part of that question is suppose you decide not to give them discounts, would they still come? Those are questions that are unanswered, and I'm not sure.
I think they're legitimate questions.
There are legitimate questions.
Commissioner Ramos, he's been at one.
I just, as a backdrop, it seems to me that we need to recognize what the purpose of Parks and Rec, step one.
Right.
If we recognize that there's a need for the constituents and the citizens of Texas to access the outdoors, for the youth to access the outdoors, where are they going? It's hard to access private lands. So the only other option that's out there are state parks. And we can become too efficient in collecting fees. We can become too efficient in increasing fees to a point where we defeat the whole purpose of state parks. And it seems to me that until we are sensitive, and we have to be sensitive to the needs of the constituents here. Now, to me, the $16 million potential loss confirms the fact that people want to go to parks. Because if, in fact, that estimate is accurate, that means, and let's say we charge each one $2, that means that many additional people access parks. And my concern is that we can become so efficient and we can increase fees to a point where we defeat the whole purpose of parks. It seems to me that if anything, we should be supplementing and putting additional funds in parks to ensure that the citizens of Texas that cannot access the outdoors actually access the outdoors. So, you know, and I'm all in favor of audits, and it's great, and I think we need to respect it. But I think as we look at this, we need to back up, and to the extent that our staff may have let people in, you know, church groups, people that drive up that maybe cannot afford a carload of people at $3, I think we need to continue to be sensitive to that. And I think the legislature needs to consider that, because the purpose of parks, I don't see it as a business to make profit. I see the state parks as a place where the citizens of Texas can experience the outdoors that unfortunately cannot otherwise experience the outdoors.
It goes back to the premise of Theodore Roosevelt. Parks are a gift to the people, from the people.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Just a couple of points on this $16 million. Again, it's $8 million per year without any fee increases to generate that revenue. So we could not increase an entrance fee to collect this revenue. We're estimating in those 2 years to be bringing in about $34 million in state park fees. So $8 million on top of $34 is over a 25% increase. The audit report also, when it referenced the $16 million, I think it's important to note that they also stated there was an overestimation of visitation. And this number says, in the report, it says, excluding the visitation issue, this could be as much as $16 million. So they have identified a couple of issues, but they're taking this separately without the visitation count issue.
And the bottom line is that the legislature picks up, when they see $16 million, then that's the number they're working on.
That's correct. That's the number that was in the report. And they
Okay. Yes, moving on. Water bill. Bottom line on the water bill, which again is a very, very important item to us that many of you have worked very hard on, many of the staff have been very involved in. House Bill 3 establishes a mechanism to develop environmental flow standards to be adopted by TCEQ rule, provides for creation of set-asides or reservations of water for environmental needs where unappropriated water is available, and establishes a consensus process overseen by Environmental Flows Advisory Group, supported by a science advisory group. and Senate Bill 3 by Averitt is identical to HB 3, provides some support for voluntary land stewardship and a few other factors. But bottom line, I think going into the session, both of these bills look very much like what we hoped for. We're still working on them, just like all the others. I think we're making some measurable progress here. We're very involved. The chairman's been very involved. I see Colette Barron back here. We've been very involved all the way through the process, and we'll continue to work that.
I wanted to say we have a couple of real champions in Chairman Averitt and Chairman Puente. They've taken the environmental flows issue seriously and incorporated a lot of the recommendations from the committee I served on. Like I said, when I came on here almost six years ago, this is my number one issue. I think we're going to get there. I really do. And again, Chairman Averitt and Puente are committed to make it happen.
Support a good sales tax, two bills. I believe you're all aware of those. Have been in the press a lot. Got a tremendous amount of support in both House and Senate. Basically, the bottom line of those bills lays out that all of the sporting goods sales tax collected on those items appropriate, which now is running about $108 million, something like that, anticipated to be $112 million in the next biennium, would be allocated to state parks. There's a lot of what-ifs behind that. Obviously, the appropriations process has to take that kind of action for that money to actually end up for us to use it. But the bill is passed out of committee, been referred to the Senate, tremendous amount of support. HB 7, which speaks about the transfer of historic sites, and a lot of discussion about such. We bounced around on the numbers some through time in the discussion back and forth between THC, between the TPWD, and the legislators involved. And we're looking at a roll-up now in HB 12 of probably combining. It looks like a bill that combines HB 6 and HB 7. Don't have a companion bill in that in the Senate, but it ties that sporting goods sales tax money to this transfer of some number of sites. Yesterday about noon, the number of sites was 14. My understanding is today it's back up to 18. There's some discussion between some of the elected officials as to whether or not they want their site included. That discussion is ongoing. But basically, it's revolving around the same 25 sites that we agreed with THC to work on. Cooking.
Question. When there's not a companion bill in the Senate, do we assume that there will be a companion bill in the Senate? And if there is not a companion bill, what is the likelihood of this combined bill passing?
Well, there's not a companion bill, and I'm not sure. Gene, would you help me out there as to what process-wise would happen?
Are we talking about 12?
HB 12
moves. Both 7 and 12. Neither 7 nor 12 as a concern.
Deputy Executive Director of Administration. That bill would have to pass out of House and then come over to the Senate, and they'd pick up a Senate sponsor and pass through the Senate as a House bill. It has to pass both sides. But it doesn't necessarily have to have a companion bill on the Senate side. It takes a little longer that way. If you're going to do a bill, if you're going to pass a bill with only a single side, it's better to start the bill on the House side than the Senate side, because it's quicker to go through the Senate. So the bill, is probably not necessarily have any liabilities just having a single sponsor.
What is talk about the dollars in 12. What is the latest report on the dollar amount?
There are no dollar amounts in 12.
There are no dollar amounts in 7 with relationship to the transfer of the state parks.
Well, in 7 it talks about, in HB 7 it talks about 6% of the sporting sales tax going in to historic sites.
Then what is the dollar amount that they're talking about of transferring? Maybe it's 3113.
No.
Okay.
Mr. Parker, the latest version that we saw as of last night has 6% of the sporting goods sales tax appropriated.
6% of what we get.
6% of the sporting goods sales tax.
That's appropriated.
Right.
Is
the appropriated total or the total generated?
Not total generated. Appropriated.
Appropriated.
Keyword.
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 Keyword. So it's not of the 106 or 108 million. It's of whatever. Hopefully all that's appropriated, but if not, it's whatever. Now, the second part of that, John, Commissioner Parker, is that it is supposed to be tied to the number of sites, in a sense, dollar to dollar. So if it went from, let's say, 25, or I can't remember what the max number was at one time, it drops to 14, then that percentage is supposed to drop accordingly. Now, that's what we're going to have to work through, you know, stay on top of. Okay? So that the park side doesn't drop, but the dollars still stay up.
Right.
I mean, it's got to be, it's supposed to come up or down accordingly. Does that make sense? Am I making sense?
Sure.
That's what you do.
Well, I mean, that's part of our job. I'm part of working with THC, and we've had a good working relationship with them. And this is certainly something that we'll follow through on. The chairman has signed a letter in agreement, and we will honor that, and we believe THC is going to honor it also.
Two bills that, as you see, have been referred on the Texas State Railroad, and probably the main thing that they do is create this Texas State Railroad Authority, which kind of gives the local group oversight of the Texas State Railroad for the possibility of it being operated by a private concessionaire, which we've seen, and I believe y'all are aware, we've seen a proposal from the private company that operates the railroad at Durango, Silverton, and the Smoky Mountains have made a proposal. This bill doesn't, as I recall, doesn't speak to funding. It just creates this authority that says this thing could happen. I think, gentlemen, that pretty well, most of the other information in here go to the next Mary. Deer breeding bills, we're working very, very closely with Mr. Hildebrand and the deer breeder groups. I think we've got a consensus on these bills. Mr. Sinclair, law enforcement, and Mr. Wolf in wildlife have worked very, very closely with these folks. And I believe that the bills as they stand right now, we are in consensus, and we believe that they do some things that are worthwhile and important to get done. I don't think there's anything else there that we need to particularly spend any time on unless y'all want to, if you have any other questions.
Thank you, Bob. Any other questions or discussions on the legislation? I think just so I can finish up, we need everybody's help, and I think it's a communication and education issue for some of our legislators, that's part of, I think, our job as commissioners to help the staff and make sure we get our requests across in an appropriate manner. So any help would be appreciated. With that, why don't we move on to committee item number 4, license fee and structure changes. Ms. Kim Dudish, I think, is coming up. License fee and structure changes, Kim. Yeah?
I'm Kim Dudas, license manager. I'm going to present to you a summary of the recommendations made by the License Reassessment Committee, which require commission action. As approved at the January meeting, these recommendations were posted in the Texas Register and public comment has been taken. First recommendation is combining the resident commercial fishing boat license with the non-resident commercial fishing boat license. This is to create one single license, and there are no resource or management issues with it. The next one is to combine the resident freshwater fishing guide with the non-resident freshwater fishing guide. Both these licenses are priced the same, so it's just to create, simplify the system for us. The next, we would like to rename the resident and the non-resident saltwater fishing guide to be the resident or the non-resident all-water fishing guide, because that better reflects what the actual activities that are authorized for this license. And this is going to help reduce the confusion to our constituents. We would like to split the special resident hunting license into two, one to be the senior resident hunting license. That would be authorized for seniors, and then a second license for youth hunters. We also feel this is going to help the constituents understand which license to purchase rather than having one special resident. We would like to delete the resident July-August fishing packages. They didn't accomplish what they were set out to, and it's been adding some confusion for our constituents. We recommend splitting the special resident fishing license into two, one being the senior resident fishing license, again, to help the constituents. The seniors look to for a license called senior, and then have a special resident fishing license that is for the legally blind, that they currently are included in this special resident now, and we will waive the freshwater and saltwater stamp requirements for the blind license. The next recommendation is to combine the resident day plus and repurchase fishing licenses. There's a total of six licenses there. We would like to make one single resident one day fishing license at $10. And waive the freshwater and saltwater stamp requirements for that. Similarly, for the non-residents, we're going to take those, we would like to take those six and combine them together into one $15 day license, and a constituent can purchase as many as they'd like. We would like to create a fee of $3 for the bonus red drum tag. That'll help us recoup our expenses. We took public comment. We got six responses. Four agreed. One left the comment that it makes sense to eliminate the administrative costs and still gather the information. Two disagreed. One felt the fee was too low for the non-resident commercial boat license, and one felt the bonus red drum tag should be included with the license, and the license and stamp should all be in that price. Staff would like to recommend the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the license fee structure changes to 31 TAC Chapter 53 as published in the February issue of the Texas Register. Question?
Yeah, any questions or discussion?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Pam. I will place this item on Thursday's commission meeting agenda for public comment and action, so we'll talk about it tomorrow. We're going to move on to item five, repeal a fee for proof of ownership of boats and motors. Ms. Frances Stiles, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Frances Stiles. I'm with the Administrative Resources Division. In January, I presented a briefing to you requesting information. Requesting permission to publish the repeal of the $2 boat fee for ownership reports. This fee is currently listed under the Texas Administrative Code, Title 31, Chapter 31, Section 16. Due to the improved functionality of the new boat system, we're requested to remove the fee in order to proceed with the implementation of internet online services for these reports and registration renewals. This type of information is currently available for vessels that are titled or documented through the United States Coast Guard. It's available at no fee on the internet now. Information that would be provided reveals a description of the vessels or the outboard motor, lien holder information, and the owner information, the name and addresses. This has been published in the Texas Register, and we received 4 positive comments, one of those from the Texas Boating Trades Commission, one from the Gulf Coast Yacht Brokers Association, and we received 1 negative comment against. The other 2 positive comments were just positive. This item is pending for action on tomorrow's agenda, and I'm here for any questions.
Questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just make a comment to while Francis is here and back to Kim's presentation. This item is one of those items where staff working out there every day, this item in the previous item, where staff working every day looking for ways to simplify, looking for ways to make our record-keeping system simpler and to knock out a step, knock out a requirement that our boat owners have been having to jump through. That's an ongoing process. The item that Kim presented was a result of a tremendous amount of work led by Dr. McKinney and Kim and various members of all of the different staff to, again, simplify our licensing process and work that goes on every day here, and I very much appreciate all that they do.
Thank you, Francis. Any other discussions? Okay, we'll place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you. Committee item number 6, nonprofit partner rules. Ms. Ann Wright.
Good morning, Commissioners. Excuse me. I'm Ann Wright, General Counsel, and I'm here to present nonprofit partner rules. The Parks and Wildlife Code authorizes the department to cooperate with nonprofit partners, and it authorizes the commission to designate an official nonprofit partner. And as you all know, that's the Parks and Wildlife Foundation. It also requires that the commission adopt rules regarding best practices, standards, and safeguards for state assets held by a nonprofit partner. And I should point out here that as a result of really just our practice, nonprofit partners do not hold state assets. That's we've been a little strict on that. And then guidelines for the official nonprofit partner solicitation and acceptance of sponsorship. There's also a requirement in the government code that if a state agency is authorized to receive donations or has a private organization that supports the agency, that the agency is to adopt rules. And one of the items that have to be addressed are the relationship between the agency and the agency employees and the donor. In our rules, we split the various nonprofit partners into 3 types. The official nonprofit partners, I mentioned, that's the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and the closely related nonprofit partners. And those are primarily nonprofit partners that are associated with a specific site or project, like, you know, the Friends of a Certain State Park. Then there is the official nonprofit partner, and I mentioned that. The general nonprofit partners are really just any nonprofit organization that has any kind of relationship with the agency. It's my understanding that back in 2001, during the Sunset Review process, one of the desires that was expressed by legislators in the Sunset Committee was that the agency keep a comprehensive list of nonprofit partners that we have some sort of relationship with. Most of these are people, for example, when they have an advisory committee where there is somebody who serves as a representative of a nonprofit partner. There are other nonprofits that support us in various ways, although they're not associated with a particular site. For each nonprofit partner, the rules address 4 types of best practices. There's just the general best practices regarding officers and directors, fundraising, and sponsorship. An example of a general best practice is something, you know, applicable discrimination laws, proper incorporation, holding or obligating department funds. again, because we have a closer relationship with the official nonprofit partner and closely related nonprofit partners, we have stricter requirements now because they're out doing things on our behalf, and we want to make sure that we're involved in that. We require certain reporting and notification of TPWD and others of their meetings. Officers and directors, one of the statutory requirements is that they be provided a copy or a link to our land and water plan. We also require for the OMP and CRMPs that they provide certain information to their officers and directors to make sure they're well informed about what they're doing and that there's a conflict of interest policy. Fundraising, we require permission before engaging in fundraising, and I should point out here that there's nothing that prohibits an unrestricted cash donation. We like those. But if an entity is out raising funds on behalf of the department, we want to make sure it's something that we want to do. So we want to have some input there. They can't do things that require that we undertake some action. You know, for example, if you'll contribute, Parks and Wildlife will do this. We want to make sure that we're involved in that decision. We want to make sure that if they're raising funds for us, that they're managing them prudently. And then for the closely related nonprofit partners, we want them their projects to benefit us or the nonprofit's mission. Sponsorship requires our approval of sponsorships. Again, this is kind of that same deal where if a corporation is going to sponsor a Parks and Wildlife activity, we want to make sure that they're not making promises we can't fulfill. We want to make sure that we're all in agreement as to the level of sponsorship donation, recognition, excuse me. There is a statutory provision that prohibits the agency from accepting donations from commercial entities regulated by TPWD, and we want to make sure that our nonprofits comply with that, and then I mentioned the sponsorship recognition. We also have just some general requirements and department procedures. For example, there's a legal requirement that donations over $500 have to be accepted by the commission, and we prohibit TPWD employees from obligating nonprofit partner funds. The commission approved publication of this back in November, and in December we provided a copy of the rules to about 50 of the nonprofit partners. We made some changes, and we published it for official comment on March 2nd, and then we received some specific, very good suggestions from one commenter, and another commenter just supported it without stating his reasons. We're proposing to make changes as a result of the comments. There's a provision about use of facilities by a nonprofit partner has to be pursuant to an agreement. We want to add written agreement. If a facility has more than one closely related nonprofit partner, we're asking that they notify each other of meetings so that they are coordinating their efforts. And there are a number of places throughout our rules, the proposed rules, where we require, for example, a conflict of interest policy. And a lot of these nonprofit organizations are very small, and so we're going to develop model policies and procedures for them that they can adopt. And this is the recommendation that staff will be presenting tomorrow, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or discussion? A lot there. Thank you.
Thank you.
With no further questions or discussions, I'll place this item on Thursday's commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Is there any other?
No, sir.
Things to discuss?
That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. The committee has completed its business and we'll move on to the Conservation Committee. Chairman Montgomery, out.